ATL Files, the ultimate Falcons podcast with Nate Lundy.
From thefalcoholic.com, she is on Twitter at Gina Thomas. That's J-E-A-N-N-A. Gina Thomas joins us to talk about the Falcons. Gina, let's start here. As you look back on the preseason, what kind of letter grade would you give overall to what you saw out of the Falcons in those four games?
We saw some promising things, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. The Falcons drafted a couple of linebackers this season who really add a lot of speed and athleticism. So I would say that we're seeing some improvement there, fewer missed tackles than we saw during the season last year. But offensively, especially in week three when the starters got the most playing time, the team seemed to still be struggling with Kyle Shanahan's scheme. So overall, I would probably have to give this team's performance in the preseason a C, and I'm hopeful that once we hit the regular season this week that we'll see some improvement.
Julio Jones last year, Gina, you know, went crazy, obviously, almost 1,900 yards. He seems to have his eye on the 2,000-yard mark, and we certainly know Matt Ryan has the arm for it. Do you think Julio Jones can crack the 2,000 mark?
I think Julio Jones can do just about anything. He is really the most remarkable athlete that I've ever been around. And the thing about Julio is that he's very competitive and he's very serious about achieving his goals. So, yeah, I think that he certainly is capable of that. The one thing is, though, I think that the coaches would like to spread the ball around a little bit more. They brought in Mohamed Sanu, who's going to take away some touches from Julio. I know that they want to get both Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman involved at the running backs out of the backfield. And then Jacob Tammy was kind of he became more of a factor last year as the season went on, and he has really good chemistry with Matt Ryan. And then they've also drafted Austin Hooper, the tight end out of Stanford, so I think they'll get him involved as well. So if anything keeps Julio from achieving that, it's going to be the fact that the Falcons are actually spreading the ball around.
When you talk about that running game and you talk about Freeman and you talk about Coleman, how do you think the balance is going to be between those two guys?
I think we're going to see it balance out about 60-40. So I think we'll see Tevin get many more carries this year than he did last year. I think they're going to want to keep both guys fresh and healthy so that they can really have a dynamic ground attack. That's something that they really didn't have consistently last year. Some of that was run blocking, but some of it, too, was just it was only Devontae, and he went down at one point with a concussion, and that impacted things. And Tevin had a lot of issues with fumbles last year, so he was kind of slow to get going. So I do think that he looked great. Tevin looked great in training camp and through the preseason, and I think he'll be more involved. I do think it'll be about a 60-40 split with Devontae still taking the bulk of the carries.
Gina, over on the defensive side of things, we look at a couple of rookie linebackers who both wound up being named starters. What kind of impact do you think that, you know, that Jones and Campbell can have right out of the gate for this defense?
I am really excited about these two young linebackers. And the main thing is they just bring so much speed to that side of the ball that the Falcons have been missing for years. And Devondre Campbell, I loved watching him throughout training camp because he covers like a cornerback. It's remarkable. And so covering tight ends and covering running backs out of the backfield has been a weakness for the Falcons linebacking core for the past few seasons. And he really ups their game in that area. So I'm very excited about that. And it's the same thing with Jones. He's just really fast. He's very athletic. And so just that speed in and of itself is such an upgrade.
We know they've got the speed. Do you have any concern about them being overmatched size-wise, or are you comfortable?
I'm comfortable, especially with Campbell. I still am interested to see how it works out for Jones because I feel like he is a little bit small for that middle linebacker role. But I think that what he lacks in size, he makes up for in his speed, athleticism, and the way that he hits because he's a very sure tackler.
So in talking about the defense, we look at a team that, in 2014 gave up about 26 points a game. Last year they got that down to right around 22 points a game. Are the defensive schemes that they've got set up to where they can lower that number again and improve on that tally? And if so, what makes you think they can?
I do think so, and I think that the main reason is they've had another full offseason to acclimate to this defensive scheme. The scheme that they're running is actually much simpler than what the Falcons ran under Mike Nolan. players have told me that when Nolan was the coordinator, they would have five or six things that they would have to think through pre-snap, and then they would have to still try to read and react to the play. So they just kind of got bogged down in the minutiae of that scheme. This scheme is much simpler, but there's still a lot to it. And so with the veteran players having one additional offseason to acclimate and get comfortable in the scheme, players have said that they feel like they're operating much more quickly, that they're not having to think as much about what they're doing, and they're better able to just read and react to things on the field. So I think that that in and of itself is going to make a big difference.
Looking at this this opening weekend game, you know, we see the fact that, you know, a couple of Matt Ryan's top single game performances came when he had Dirk Koetter as an offensive coordinator, and now here he is going up against a Koetter. Do you think in week one, the fact that Dirk has such a strong knowledge of Matt Ryan, does it give a little bit of an edge to the Bucs, or are things going to be okay there for Matt Ryan despite facing off against his old coordinator?
Well, and it's not just Dirk. It's actually Ryan's former head coach, Mike Smith, is the defensive coordinator in Tampa Bay. And so I do think that that does give Tampa Bay a different edge. Mike Smith obviously is extremely familiar with Ryan and his tendencies, and I think that that just gives him truly an advantage in preparing for this game. So, yeah, I think that that is something, maybe an underrated element of this week one matchup, that does give Tampa Bay an advantage.
When you look at the schedule that starts things off for Atlanta, you wind up going up against Tampa and Oakland, two teams that, you know, when you look across the national media, get talked about as kind of up-and-coming teams. Then you wind up in what could very well be a shootout against Drew Brees and the Saints, then up against Carolina and Denver. So, and even Seattle is in that mix. So when you look at the start of the season, the scheduling gods were not very favorable to Atlanta. So for you, Gina, when they come through that six games, what would you say is it would be a solid record for them, or one that you think would be acceptable given their performance?
With so many division games up front, especially the Saints, who seem to often have the Falcons number, and then the Panthers, who I think are going to be very good again this year, if they come out of that opening stretch at 500 with a 3-3 record, I'm going to feel pretty comfortable with that.
Given the matchup here against the division, you know, I was going to ask you that, and you just hit on it a little bit. Are you glad that they open up with a divisional game against Tampa, you know, in terms of being tested early, or would you rather see them open up maybe against a non-divisional opponent and kind of, you know, shake the rust loose and enter into the season? Which do you think is more favorable?
You know, I don't even know that I have a preference. I do think that the team is perfectly fine with going up against a division opponent right off the bat. They love those games, and Dan Quinn in particular thrives off that competition. So I know that he is, to use Dan Quinn's favorite word, he is jacked about going up against the Bucs this week and getting a division opponent right off the bat. He seems very excited, and I think the players are picking up on that and really embracing it too.
Last year they finished the season at 8-8. So last question for you, Gina, what would you say is an acceptable record for them by the time the regular season is done?
I am on record as projecting this team to finish 9-7. And this year's NFC, I don't think that's going to be enough for a wild card bid. It's certainly not going to be enough in the same division with the Panthers to win the division, I don't think. You know, every year is different. It just depends. And I'm very rarely correct about these projections. But 9-7 is still an improvement over last year, and especially if they're able to be a little bit more consistent, especially in the red zone on offense, I think that that's a real step forward for this team.
Great stuff. Covering the Atlanta Falcons for thefalcoholic.com and on Twitter at Gina Thomas. That is J-E-A-N-N-A. Gina, really appreciate the time here on the podcast. Look forward to visiting with you again soon. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wrapping up with Gina, the coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
Well, I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball off to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am and I am, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them. But that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team, but that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose a Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like a Mike Mularkey. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson is pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. You're going to play great defense. Typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan, or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do, more so than any team in the league. They morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how to, these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five. Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.